Hey, what's up? My name's Ray Stein, and I'm just thinking out loud. Hey, what's up? I am currently, going through a cold. And my mic is also falling down. But we will get this together, and we will read what we have for today. And then see what goes on from there. My name is Ray Stein, and you are currently on, you are currently listening to Thinking Out Loud, and today I'm thinking about the 10 delightfully spooky true ghost stories and tales of the supernatural on theoccultmuseum.com. So we will read the intro and get right into the first story. So here we go. Who doesn't love a spooky ghost story? For centuries, people have shared tales of their own otherworldly encounters with ghosts and spirits. Today, we live in a scientific and rational world. Yet, these spooky stories persist. Shared by people from across the globe, we've selected 10 of the most frightening first-hand experiences with the supernatural. From morgue doors that mysteriously open of their own accord to ghostly cries and sightings of shadowy apparitions in the dead of night. Settle in for some seriously eerie ghost stories. Best enjoyed in the dark. Which is it. It is pretty dark in my attic, but I've got a light. We love being afraid of the dark here. Best enjoyed in the dark. Prepare yourself for chills as you read the personal accounts of those who have experienced a world beyond our own and lived to tell the tale. On to the first one. Let's go. All right. Number one. A baby crying. When I was in high school, my uncle would throw me a couple bucks to help babysit his kids. Like, he would literally throw the money at you. Like, here's $10, babysit my kids. I'm going to the bar. They're yours now. With the wife, of course. With the aunt to help out. They lived in a two-story house by the water. Nice area. The kids were about 3 and 6, respectively. One day, I was sitting in their den on my phone. Hopefully the kids were asleep, or otherwise that's not good babysitting. When I started to hear a baby crying, thinking it was the 3-year-old, I headed to the bottom of the stairs to check and see if my aunt was up there dealing with it. I called for her a couple times with no response. The baby kept crying. I called for her one more time, and when I got no response, I started walking up the stairs. Then I heard my cousins and aunt playing outside. All the hairs on my body stood up, and I literally felt a chill run down my spine. I quietly turned around, walked down the stairs, got in my car, and drove away. When you're supposed to be babysitting in a haunted house, because a baby is crying, you just leave without telling the aunt, like, hey, there's a crying baby ghost in your house. I'm gonna just yeet myself out of here. Bye. The baby was still crying when I closed the door behind me. A few years later, I was drunk at a family party, and I told my uncle the story. He told me that he and his wife used to hear the baby too, and apparently, the previous owners had a kid die of SIDS. And SIDS stands for Sudden Infant Death Syndrome. In that room upstairs. What specific room this is, I do not know. He's uber Catholic. Oh. He's uber Catholic and had a mass said for the baby. He said after that it never happened again. Still gives me the willies when I talk about it, though. From user URGEHL. with triple sixes. Yeah. And then next is the man with the suitcase. I was 13 years old and drinking lemonade with my best friend in my kitchen. We were alone from where we were sitting, we could see a corridor that leads from the front door to the backyard. We were talking about something, and something made us, we were talking and something made us shut up. We looked to the corridor, and there was the shadow of a man walking by with a suitcase. He's just visiting. I know she also saw him, because we both described the same thing. A tall shadow with a suitcase. Yeah. Fast forward to a few years later. I had to do a school project with another girl. Again, I was alone at home, working on the computer when she arrived. She then asked me where my dad was. When I told her my dad was away at work, she asked me, "Well, then who's the man I saw walking downstairs and carrying a suitcase when I came in?" So far, no one else from my family has seen him. I haven't seen him again ever since. But for a while, it really scared the crap out of me to be home alone. Alright, on to the third one. By the way, that last story was from RRAARRAARRAARAAS Putin. Or, in other words, Rasputin. Very funny. Anyways, on to number three, the exorcism. I work as a paramedic. Got a call to a church. The retired nun who lived at the church was having some issues. The priest was attempting an exorcism when the family got a state order to get her into a psych facility. We got her into the back of our ambulance and all was fine. Then this 92-year-old, 90-pound woman ripped out of her leather restraints and started speaking in a voice no human could produce. That's why she needed to be exorcised in the first place. Because she has a demon inside her. She has a demon inside her. She then told me that her commander in the war had burned and buried her alive during the war when defending France against the Germans. Okay, possibly a ghost, not a demon. No demonic presence in her, maybe. It could be just a soldier that wanted to live again. The whole presence was terrifying and gave me nightmares for years to come. I told my partner to use the lights and sirens so I could get out of there as fast as possible. During the whole transport, she was speaking in weird tongues. Okay, back to the theory that it was a demon. That was from RBilly0001. And the next one is number four, the morgue door. And it mentioned something about morgue doors opening in the intro, so might have something to do with a door opening. Who knows? I used to work hospital security, and we had video cameras accessible in the office. Wow, my English is just perfect. During body escorts, we kept finding the morgue door open. That was weird because it was a heavy door that could only be opened with a key card. Pathologists were blaming security, and security was blaming pathologists for leaving it open. As we were the only two groups with access, I did a body escort one day, made sure to close the door behind me, and went back to work. Not even a half hour later, the office got a call, saying some not-so-nice stuff. Complaining that the last guard left the door open. That's the rational way of thinking about it, but it could be a ghosty goo. A ghosty goo. Have you ever thought of that? That it could just possibly be a ghost? A ghost. I swore up and down I didn't and went to check the cameras. The camera showed me pulling the door shut, pushing on it, and then wiggling the lock handle to ensure it was closed. I wasn't even out of frame from the camera yet before we could see the door swing all the way open, hit the wall, and then slowly swing shut until it was slightly ajar. From Lilith Immaculate. Alrighty then. On to number 5, the Haunted Hotel. Not me, but a friend who is a pilot. She stayed at an older hotel in downtown Chicago and was studying for her recurrent class, which was in a few weeks. While at the desk, deep in thought, she heard people talking and laughing. When she looked up, it got quiet. She said it sounded like it was in the room with her, and went back to studying. The noise started off softly, and then again sounded like a party was going on in her room. She got up and looked around, and there was silence. There was no sounds coming from any rooms. No televisions on, no radios, no people in the hallway. The noise was definitely in her room. Yeah. That night, around 2 a.m., she was in her bed, and, well, she was in the bed in the room. Not her specific bed. And she felt someone brush strands of hair from her forehead and tuck it in behind her ear. The ghost is admiring her beauty. She jumped up and turned on the light, and there was no one there. As per usual. She didn't get back to sleep and bed around that overnight, so she wouldn't be in that hotel again. Like she left? Or what does it mean by bed? The story was from Sandbar Girl. 6 Echoes of the Past. That title sounds familiar, so I might know the story. Maybe. I don't know. When I was little, I saw a recurring ghost. She would appear for a split second and then vanish. But I could always perfectly recreate the image. She was a short little girl wearing a frilly blue dress and a big red bow, blonde hair, blue eyes, large ears, couple of notable sightings were her looking through my mom's jewelry box and one peering through our glass door at me with her hands over her eyes, binocular style. It never really bothered me, and these happened for a while. A few years later, at my grandfather's house, we were helping him unpack in his attic, and I found a portrait of his long since deceased sister. Not quite the same dress, slightly different bow, but that face was absolutely her. She had died as a child, quite tragically. So obviously I had never met her. But I did know of her, but had never seen a picture of her before. So not a scary supernatural encounter, but rather a heartwarming one. Knowing the great aunt I never met was saying hello. Aw. See, not all supernatural ghost stories are 100% scary. Some of them could be happy, like this one. Like, I don't know if I should tell you guys this, but like, after the day my first dog was put down, I was sleeping in my mom's room, and my mom said the next day that she swore that she could hear little paw prints, like, going down the hallway. Yeah. He was just coming back to visit. I guess I was trying to tell that story to prove that not all ghost stories are 100% scary. Like, not all ghosts are vengeful spirits, of course. So, let's just move on to the next one. To the next story. Number 7, Alone in the Church. I worked for my church for 2 years. One day, a co-worker and I were closing up the church at the end of the day. By this point, doors were locked and we had checked every room to make sure no one was in the building. The church had two lobbies, one on each side of the building. They were connected with a long hallway lined with classrooms. As my co-worker and I were turning off lights and double-checking the doors in the one lobby, I looked down the hall and could distinctly see a boy, late teens to early 20s, in a blue plaid short-sleeve shirt and khaki pants, sitting in the chair. He had his hands folded and was looking at the ground as if in deep thought. Initially, I didn't think anything of it, as this wasn't an uncommon sight. I turned, and in a second it hit me that we were the only ones in the building. I turned again, and there was no one. But I'm pretty sure it means I turned around again and there was nobody there. From the time that I saw him to when he disappeared, all happened in about a second or two. I could tell my coworkers what I saw. Oh, I told my coworker what I saw, and I'm spitting on my screen while... I'm a dork. I told my co-worker what I saw, and we both noped out of there really quick. They noped out of there. They noped out. Like, just nope. Bye. Being that it was our first unexplainable, potentially supernatural experience, we were both pretty freaked out. But we never felt threatened, nor was the presence malicious in any degree. This story was by user Agent Marks. Number 8. The Escaped Prisoner. I worked in a maximum security prison for a while. I was assigned to Central Control 1 night. Central Control 1 night, yeah. Which is where the camera screens were. One of the cameras was for the classifications room. I glanced at it and there was an inmate in there. This was super odd because it was 2 a.m. and nobody was supposed to be in there. Everyone that had keys to the room went home at 5. Anyways, so this inmate is just sitting there, doing nothing. I got the sergeant's attention, and told him someone was in there and gave him the spare key to the room. He went to go check it out with a couple of other people, but by the time they got there, the room was empty. They searched for like 15 minutes, but there was definitely no one in there. By user, capital B, lowercase b, 21297. Number 9. Calls from the old morgue. My colleague used to work in a hospital and would often receive phone calls around 3 a.m., but no one would speak at the other end of the receiver. The number was from an extension somewhere in the hospital, and when they looked it up, it was from an old morgue nobody had used in a while. From user Manic Pixie Chick. Alright, last but not least, number 10, the footsteps. Alright, number 10, the footsteps. When I was about 12, our family moved into a new house. New to us. Actually, it was quite old. It was in our same village, but down a different lane. That's kind of like my house right now. It became new to us in my freshman year when we moved here in the town that I live in. But it is actually around 100 years old. And it used to be a funeral home too, so it's probably haunted. Part of it used to be a bungalow, so my room and my sister's room were on the ground floor, down a long hallway. All of the ground floor had walnut flooring, and there was a Persian rug outside the door to my room to avoid cold toesies in the morning. Every night, around 11 or so, I would hear footsteps walking at a fairly slow pace right down the hall, from the end guest suite, up past our rooms, and away down the hall to the living room. I was always in bed when I heard them, and so was everyone else. You know how you can tell who a family member is by the way they walk up the stairs, or open a specific door. I knew it wasn't anyone in my family. Plus, it was the sound of outdoor shoes clacking on the wood and everyone in my family wore slippers inside the house. I would hear footsteps start, fairly loud, on the wooden floor, way down the hall, come up past my sister's room, and then there would be a pause. Well, whatever it was walked over the rug. You could hear the gap in the footsteps. About 3 seconds. Then they would start again. On the other side of the rug and fade out as they walked down the hall away to the living room. Then they would come back. Same footsteps. Break across the rug. Resumed on the other side. I don't remember ever feeling scared. But I never ever want to see, I never ever went out to see what it was. I would fall asleep to the sound. It would go on for a really long time. It stopped about 3 or 4 weeks after we moved in, and never heard it again. And I never heard it again. I didn't really think about it much after it stopped, but I've never forgotten it. And as an adult, it makes me shiver to remember it. From user KE-1930. Alright, in this next segment, we are reviewing another article from theoccultmuseum.com called Campfire Stories: 13 Terrifying Accounts of Paranormal Encounters in the Wilderness. Have you ever found yourself alone in the wilderness, far from the hustle and bustle of modern life, and felt the sensation of being watched? Sometimes you just instinctively know you are not alone, that you are being watched by more than just shadows and unseen animals. From ghostly apparitions creeping through the woods at night, to sightings of strange beasts and mythical creatures, here are 13 terrifying accounts shared by hikers, campers, and hunters of paranormal encounters in the wilderness. Readers, beware. You may never go camping again after reading these terrifyingly true horror stories. I never go camping anyways, so, what's the diff? I mean, I haven't been camping in a while is what I mean. But yeah, let's get into it. Number 1, a perfect circle. My pops and I are avid campers. Not professionals anymore, but my dad used to be a wilderness guide for kids. We typically prefer the eastern/western Sierras, as they have great car camping spots next to lakes and a lot of great trails. Last summer, we decided to go up for a 2-night stay and do some day hiking. The campground was pretty full, not unusual for the summer, but we were lucky enough, I thought at the time, to find a pretty secluded site, and we set up our tents. First night was normal, little bear activity, but we're used to that. Second night, I crawl into my backpacking tent. Head and toes hit both ends. Very small. Does sound like a small tent. Maybe get a bigger one? But bigger ones could possibly be too expensive, so yeah. And I pass out cold. Until about 3 a.m., when I wake up to the sound of footsteps. Now, listen up. If you wake up at 3 a.m., go back to sleep. There's 3 a.m. is supposed to be the witching hour, when all the ghosts are a lot more active, all the demons. But I read this thing that if you wake up around the 3 a.m. spectrum, so to speak, just anywhere from, like, I want to say 2:40 to like 3:59, go back to sleep. Okay? My dad is a diabetic and needs to get up to pee around 3-4 times a night. And the sounds are definitely footprints, but they're coming from the wrong direction. We were located next to the bathrooms, so the footsteps should be moving in that direction. But they're coming closer to my tent. They stop about a yard short, and the breathing gets really heavy. I first brush it off as my dad, maybe lost without a flashlight. The breathing goes away. I fall back asleep, only to be woken a few minutes later to breathing right above my tent. You know that rush of terror up your spine? I had that. This wasn't my dad. I laid perfectly still, but still, footprints continued to circle the tent. I had the rain fly so I couldn't see through the roof, and it was a new moon and pitch black. Now I convince myself, a heavy sleeper, that I'm just dreaming. Just as that thought runs through my head, I feel a single finger run the length of my foot through the tent. Real slow and methodical. Now, I figure, I have to be dreaming because my foot is in my sleeping bag, and I thought I couldn't possibly feel that. But that comfort disappeared quickly when I realized, using the small ambient light available, that my foot was bare and out of the bag. I laid frozen. Whatever it was, stroked my foot. For a minute or two, gave a few more labored breaths, and then just stood above my tent for what felt like an eternity. Before disappearing, I stayed up all night. In the morning, I heard my dad get out of his tent. I bolted up and met him by the fire. He looked me in the eye and asked if I had gotten up the night before. I asked him the same, and he said he had around 2 a.m., because he thought someone was going through our stuff. As I told him my story, we noticed our gear had been neatly rearranged on the table. Every item, nothing taken. Footprints in a perfect circle around my tent. We still can't even talk about it. From Kitten in a Bear Suit. That's the username. Number 2. The Stick Man. 6 hours walk through thick brush to the nearest passable road. Age 14, maybe 15, hiking and camping with 2 fellow Boy Scouts and an adult. We made camp for the night, had a cold dinner because it was too wet to scavenge for firewood, and all turned in early. Even in the woods, there are noises. Frogs, owls, small game, and every sort of bug. My tent mate and I awoke at the same time, maybe 3 a.m., which I said is the witching hour. So, if you wake up at that time, go to sleep. To hear nothing outside. Absolute, ear-straining silence. It's like a woolen blanket wrapped around our head. Like a woolen blanket wrapped around the head. After a few minutes, the bugs started chirping again, and we went back to sleep. When we woke up in the morning, we found that five of the pine trees, surrounding our little clearing had been connected in a star shape with scraped lines. That's not what trees do. They don't just link up all buddy-buddy and scratch each other. And pinned to each one was a stick man. Like the ones from the Blair Witch. The leader and his son, occupants of the other tent, accuse us of messing with them. But we both knew it wasn't us. That's a story nobody believes. I mean, who would believe the alibis of two kids? I'll never camp without the safety of a large group and nearby civilization ever again. I just wouldn't do it at all. I wouldn't go camping out in the middle of nowhere by myself at all in a small group. No, thank you. That was a story from user awesomeificationist. Yeah. Number 3, The Land Remembers. One night, I was camping near an old river dam, near where an old river dam had been. I pulled the canoe in late, so I just draped the tarp over the canoe and crawled it in underneath it and fell asleep. In the middle of the night, I woke up to the sound of roaring water. I crawled up out from under the tarp, and the sound stopped. I thought it must have been imagining it, or it was the wind through the trees or something. I crawled back under the tarp, and the sound started again. This time, when I crawled out, it didn't stop. The sound got louder and louder. I realized that it sounded like water ripping through the woods. Even the dogs had their hair on end. I quick pulled the tarp off the canoe and dragged it up to the top of a ridge and waited to see what was making the noise. Then I heard the voices, men yelling and a dull thumping noise. I huddled down next to the boat, pulled the dog close, and waited for the sun to come up to find out what was happening. Morning came, and there was nothing to see. I accidentally hit the mic. To this day, I don't know what that was, but I have my ideas. I will not camp there ever again. I was told that the land remembers. And that's fine. I just don't need to be there when it's remembering. The land remembers. That could be an explanation for so many paranormal happenings. That the house just remembers. Just like people remember. Even in the afterlife, they still remember. And that's most likely why there are so many vengeful spirits to think about. If you think about it. Not to think about, but if you think about it, there's probably plenty of vengeful spirits out there. In any sort of house. Could be one or two in my house. Maybe not vengeful spirits, but spirits in general. That was a story from Lone Squirrel. That's the username. Number 4. The Skin Changer. The Skin Changer. Like a transformer or something. But like with skin. What? Like that Baron guy from Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. He can be anything, anyone. Like change his body physically, except for his eyeballs, the color of his eyeballs. Wildland firefighter with the Forest Service. Not my story, but from an old supervisor of mine that I believe completely. By the way, I'm sniffling. That's what that noise is. Setting is 2004 or so. Hell's Canyon or area of middle Idaho. His crew had been working all day on emerging incident. On an emerging incident, and were going to be working through the night as well. Being the assistant superintendent of the crew, second in charge effectively, he was out ahead scouting on an ATV or some such. He was working his way down a logging road, his way down a logging road that clearly had not been used in some time when a bobcat or lynx, it's been a few years since I heard it, appears in the middle of the road, but doesn't run away as they usually would. Thing stands there for about a good 10 seconds, screams at him, and scampers up a tree not 5 feet off the road. So this animal thing just like stood there for 10 seconds and was just like, meh, then scurried off. I have to be quiet. So I'm not going to actually scream, but it was just like, ah, me. It's funny. If you think about it, like, if it's doing a funny. My apologies. My computer shut off. Like I bumped something or something, I don't know. I bumped something or something. Yeah. But anyways, then he finds this odd but not particularly unsettling. Just half a mile or so down the road, he finds a small cabin. Also odd, as this is federal land and no private structures should be here. upon investigation, as dang Matt Smith would say, don't investigate. All the windows had been boarded shut tight, and someone had done a good job of doing so. The door now had been punched out and secured a hole to a hole drilled into the log frame by a chain. Someone did not want anything getting out in or out. Peering through the hole in the door, he can see that everything in the house is upset. This has him kind of unsettled, so he hops on his ATV and heads back up the road. Well, here's where it gets real interesting. Right where the bobcat had been, there stands a Native American woman in a badly tattered nightgown and bare feet, just standing there. He yells at her, asking if she needs help. She just screamed at him, the same scream as the cat from before, and climbs up right up the tree, faster than any human has a right to be climbing. Obviously, he nopes out of there as fast as he can. He nopes out of there as fast as he can, unsure of who or what he just saw. He asks a local guy about it, about the cabin. After asking around a little, a local Native American hears them talking and informs them that they saw a Pamawa. Excuse the likely butchered spelling. In effect, a skin changer, a warg. Now, I would not believe most people that tried to tell me that, but this was a serious man that did not mess around about many things. He was dead serious the two times I heard him tell it, and I 100% believe he saw what he saw. And this story was from an anonymous person. Hey. Number 5. The Missing Hiker. This is number 5, by the way. I don't know if you heard that because I'm speaking so quietly. I'm going to back up from the microphone a little bit because it's probably just like... I don't know if you could tell, but I got really up close to the mic just then. Park Ranger here. Another ranger and I were out on a search and rescue call once. The missing person was a man in his 20s. He had gone hiking and had not returned the day that he intended to. When we got the call, it was nighttime, but we hiked in a few miles and set up camp on a ridge that had a pretty good view. He had gone into the woods prepared, so we decided to wait until daylight before beginning the search. About 2 a.m., I get up and I'm taking a pee. A little tinkle-winkle. When I see a moving light at the base of the cliffs, across the valley and a few miles away. Looks like a flashlight beam. I tell the other ranger, and we make the decision to keep waiting for daylight. The next morning, we decide to go check out the area and bring this guy home. he get to approximately where I saw the light the night before. Pretty sure they mean we. We get to approximately where I saw the light the night before and start calling his name. Soon we find his body and at the base of the cliff. No, no. He had fallen 60 feet on his head. The body was badly mangled. We radio back that it has now become a recovery instead of a rescue. Dang. At this point, the other ranger yells to me to come look at this. Lying 20 feet from the man's body was his maglite. It seemed odd, but I thought nothing of it until the other ranger reminded me of the light the night before. It kind of gave me the creeps, but I still dismissed it. Before too long, the coroner arrived and inspected the body. After he took the body back to the lab, he said that the man had been dead for at least 48 hours before we found the body. That's 2 whole days, man. Oh no. All of a sudden, the oh crap alarm went off in my brain. I knew that it couldn't be possible. I had the coroner review his work. Same result. I tried to find an explanation for the light I had seen, perhaps other hikers. But one search and rescue guy had stayed at the only trailhead in the area all night. No one had come or gone. To this day, I have no clue what I saw that night. It freaked me out, though. From Lepus_Americanus. Maybe it was like the guy's ghost, like, hey, my body's down here. Hello. Can you see this at all? Number six, laughter in the night. Oh golly, that does not sound like a good title. This is not gonna be a happy camping story. My dad and I would occasionally go hunting together when I was a kid. I was 14 and my dad knew a guy who owned what seemed to be half of Georgia. I mean, the amount of property this guy owned was ridiculous. He let people hunt out there, and if he trusted you, he'd let you camp out there for a couple of nights if you wanted. He'd always make sure we had a way to call for help, though, before we did it. I loved camping out there more than I did just going hunting for a few hours then coming home. I liked the woodsman feel of living out in the woods. We woke up early one morning and hiked into the woods. It was still dark when we got to our stand. We didn't see or hear anything, not even birds. I remember my dad commenting on it. And looking back, it should have been a sign. Frustrated, we pack up and look for a spot to camp. And we would set up again later that evening. My dad suggested we go deeper in to better our chances of seeing something, so that's what we did. We hiked for a few hours, found a clearing, set up a small camp, got settled and passed the time freaking ourselves out by talking about Bigfoot or other woodland creatures. It seems like a lot of people want to search for Bigfoot, but nobody has found Bigfoot yet. He could be a very real creature. He's just a tall, hairy creature that is very, very smart nowadays, because I haven't heard anything on it, nor have seen any commercials for any type of shows hunting on him, like hunting him like I used to when I was little. We hike a ways away from our camp, set up our blind, and wait. Again, nothing. We get back and our tent has been pulled up and laid flat. Not in a neat way, but it's just kind of laying there. We thought it was just the wind or something, and we didn't put it upright, and it collapsed. We didn't think much of it, since we didn't see or even hear anything all day. We decide to leave the following day and try again later that week. We settle in for the night, build our really small campfire, and just relax. Again, not even birds are making a sound. I remember thinking how odd it was to be this deep into the woods and only hear one or two birds the whole trip. Oh well, maybe we are making too much noise and scared everything off. We go to sleep soon after settling in. It's pitch black, middle of the night. I wake up for some reason just to try to go back to sleep. I'm in that half asleep, half awake phase when I hear laughter. I kind of jolt awake, but don't hear it anymore, so I figured it was a dream. I lay back down, and a few minutes later, I hear it again. It continues and gets pretty loud. I wake up again, but this time my dad is up too. He whispered and asked, "Did you hear that?" And this is when my heart dropped. He heard the laughing too. It wasn't a dream. We heard it again, but it was faint, and now that I'm actually awake and I'm paying attention to it. It sounded kind of like several people laughing in unison. It wasn't cackling or hysterical laughter, but just kind of normal laughter. It didn't last but for maybe 5 or 6 long seconds. I have never felt that much fear before in my entire life. We didn't hear it anymore after that, but needless to say, we didn't get any sleep. We packed up as soon as the sun came up, and GTFO'd. Huh. You see, if I heard any type of laughter in the night and did not see or hear anything at all throughout the day that could have caused that, if I heard laughter in the middle of the night, I would take that as a sign to get out of my room. Like, if I knew I was wide awake and heard laughter, and I knew there was no one else in my room but myself, I would get out of my room, possibly of my house. Maybe not out of my house, maybe I would, I don't know. But, yeah. My dad was convinced someone followed us and was playing a prank. That's why we didn't see anything. he said while we were in the stand and blind. They were scaring all of the wildlife off with their unmasked scent and being on the ground. He says this, but he didn't go back out there for over a month. When he did finally go back, he mentioned it to the guy who owned the property. He wouldn't let my dad hunt there anymore. He didn't say why either. My dad thinks he made the guy think that my dad was crazy or something. I guess it is possible for someone to have followed us out there. They might be legit ninjas, though. They must be legit ninjas, though, because we went out before daybreak. Nobody but the owner was parked out there that morning. There were dead leaves and sticks everywhere, and when they decided to laugh, it came from different spots, and I never heard a footstep. That story is from Eben HSHD. Number 7, the fur coat. We have a family cabin in the middle of nowhere on a small lake with two other cabins, surrounded by forest area and flatlands both. About 2 miles away from the cabin and across the dirt road is a wildlife reserve. As kids, we walked through there all the time. After about 30 minutes walking straight into these woods, there used to be a collection of abandoned houses, an old settlement. We went exploring and found that the people who used to live there had just up and left. Typically what happens with many abandoned houses. And it's just so interesting because it seems like people just up and left everything they own in some cases. But what I find most intriguing is when, not when it's a house that's abandoned, but like a whole dang hospital or mental facility or something. And then there's still, like, stuff in there from when it was operable. I've seen videos, and there's actually an abandoned school right behind the school that I currently go to in my town. And behind that one, there's the old one-room schoolhouse. Interestingly enough. Yeah, so we just used the abandoned one for storage, and they want to try and tear it down. I don't know, for fire hazard or something. In each house, still dishes on the tables, clothing in the closets, cars parked in the clearings, all the strappings for horses in the barns. In one house, the floor was caved in, and there were about 40 pairs of women's shoes scattered around the hole in the middle. No bones, though. Animal or human. Nothing. We decided to stay away from the second floors of the house after we saw that. We figured they'd be structurally unsound. A skeletal treehouse in the middle of the clearing. After we told my parents, my dad wanted to come and look too. There was a skeletal treehouse in the middle of the clearing after we told my parents my dad wanted to come and look too. In one of the houses, we found a bedroom, fully intact. The sheets were still on the bed. The pillow still had the indentation of a head on it, but everything was covered in a thick layer of dirt and dust. And the dust on the floors only had our footprints in it. At the foot of the bed was this stunning and enormous gray fur coat. There were a few moth holes chewed in it, and it was as dirty as everything else. But when we inspected it, we knew it was a real fur coat, like likely wolf or silver fox. It was gorgeous. My dad decided he was going to bring it back and clean it up and see if he could have it remade for my mom. Dad was a thrifty guy, haha. As we were leaving, I got a chill on the back of my neck, and about 60 yards from the house, I turned around and saw an old woman glaring at us from the window of the second floor. She had her hair in a loose bun and was wearing a blue shawl on her shoulders over a cream-colored blouse. I immediately felt super guilty. If it's an abandoned house and there's a fur coat in it, even if it looks stunning, don't take it. Don't take anything from a possibly haunted, abandoned house. Just don't. It is... If you've ever watched Sam and Colby, if you've ever watched Sam and Colby's channel, you know not to take stuff from haunted places or you could get possessed. You could have a spirit latch on to you if you take stuff from a possibly haunted place. So don't do it. I grabbed my dad, who was about 10 yards ahead of me, and told him we had better put the coat back, because the woman was still living there, and we had probably scared her, and she looked a little bit ticked off. We turned back around, and I pointed to the window. I saw her glaring at us from no one there. I said she must have gone downstairs. As we approached the house, still carrying the stupid coat, one of the windows in another house had suddenly slammed shut. I ran as fast as I could into the woods. Dad, being Dad, stayed behind and started yelling for the lady to come out. He was sorry and all that. Went upstairs, no one there, dust on the floor, undisturbed. Then he started up and dropped the coat in a big hurry, and we beat it back to the road as fast as we could. About 5 years later, the government demolished the whole thing. That story was from Soul Requiem. And this last story that we will be reading will be the last one, because this recording is kind of getting pretty lengthy, so... yeah. I have always been drawn to the wild. It seems like home, and I generally know my neighbors out there. Not afraid to be in the deep woods, in the dark. Love my woods. One sunny weekday afternoon, I had dirt biked up an old mining road. It gained a couple thousand feet from the valley floor towards one of the ridges of the Cascades. When the road gave out near the bottom of a high basin, I put on my backpack and started off and started off cross country toward the ridge. It was still heavily frosted, old growth and cut, but fading in another 1,000 feet into those scraggly, wind-blown ones near the top. About 20 minutes in, and about a half a mile up from me, near the tree line, I heard this thumping sound. It was very odd, so I stopped to listen carefully. It sounded like a big, solid branch was being whacked against a solid tree. I wish you guys could see this, because I'm making the hand motion for, like, a whip or whacking a solid branch against a solid tree. If you could picture that. Oh, no. I popped my neck. I use the term solid because the hits were powerful. One or both of the pieces of wood were hard and dry. The wood resonated and rang on impact, as dry wood will, against I couldn't get over the power though. It sounded like someone was swinging a 4-inch post. Weird, right? Well, it gets better. This someone sounded like they were trying to communicate the thumping and had a very complex and well-defined pattern. Like a Morse code, sort of. And here's the weirdest part. The thumping signal occasionally became very rapid, like what a drummer could do if they were noodling around with a stick. But I swear it sounded like a 4-inch post was being treated as lightly as a drumstick. I listened for maybe about 5 minutes, just fascinated with the sound, this code, and the power of it. Then the drumming suddenly stopped. And I kind of woke up to the fear of this unknown thing out there. I had my pistol, I had my bear spray, and my knife. I really only fear cougars. And even then, I figure they'll have a bad day trying to take me down. Still, the silence as I stared into the forest ahead seemed loaded. And I turned on my heels and left that valley. That place and that experience gave me the chills. And that high valley won't see my shadow again. I have read stories about some of the native peoples around here having valleys that they just wouldn't go into. I can now easily understand how these legends get started. That was a story from Turgid Pinky. Alright guys, that has been a reading of 10 delightfully spooky, 10 delightfully spooky true ghost stories and tales of the supernatural, and 8 out of 13 terrifying accounts of paranormal encounters in the wilderness. Yeah. And both articles are on theoccultmuseum.com, so if you want to go check those out, I will put the link in the description of this episode. So, you might want to take a look at the description of this episode. But anyways, that's all I have for today, and I wanted to make sure this episode was a bit more along the lines of the 30-minute time limit that I want, typically, for my episodes to be. But since my episodes have kind of been quite significantly longer than that, I really tried to shorten this one a little bit. Didn't want to make it too lengthy. But anyways, that's all I have for today. I want you guys to have a great day, a great life, a great whatever, and stay safe out there, and I'll see you next time. Bye!